For most of the 20th century, inequality between Europe's regions declined. But what's happened during the last 40 years? New historical data gives us the answer. Welcome to Vox Talks, a series of interviews with some of the world's leading economists. My name's Tim Phillips, and today I'm joined by Joan Rosés of the London School of Economics.
Hello, Tim.
And Nicholas Wolf of Humboldt University Berlin.
Hello.
They're the authors of the Vox EU column, The Return of Regional Inequality, Europe from 1900 to Today. And that title's maybe a spoiler for the story that you're going to tell us about the development of Europe's regions during the post-1980 period. Nicholas, first of all, there's been a lot of talk about income and wealth inequality recently. So you've done the new research on inequality between regions. Why is this different and what's happened there?
The regional dimension, of course, first and foremost, looks at the geographical location of economic activity, right? So what we have done is we looked over, one century of data for a consistently defined set of regions and could actually show that regions became more similar to each other over much of the century, but around 1980, they started to change and they started to become less similar.
And the analysis that you've done is similar to the type of work that's been done with other data sets, for example, Thomas Piketty, Branko Milanovic?
Yes, indeed. There's been a lot of discussion on these dimensions of personal income and wealth inequality. And the surprising finding there was that from around, again, the 1980s, there was a sharp increase in inequality between persons. And now what we find with our data is that a similar story can be told from a more geographical perspective, that there's also more inequality between regions.
Who defines these regions?
It's very interesting. Normally, we take the definition of the European Union, that is NUTS-2, that normally is the historical region in many countries. In other countries, in few, are much more political decisions in the last years. But this historical region sometimes has a functional form. This implies that, for example, they have for many years, market relations, or they have a kind of a strong communication. It's a kind of unified economy, well before the Industrial Revolution and so on.
And where do you get the data from for this? Because you're going back a long way.
There are two periods from the last 20, 30 years. There are official data. Then Eurostat, for example, produces official data from the national offices. In the previous periods, we use a shortcut method that consists in collect data on employment and population for every region and data on wages, and using wages and employment by sector, we estimate productivity, and we distribute the national GDP across the different regions of every country with this productivity measure. We test if this has errors, and surprisingly, then this is really cheap compared to how much money the National Accounting Office spend today. We have errors of 5%, 3% with the official estimates, but it's quite good.
Nicholas, now tell us about your headline result. That there are effectively two eras here, before 1980 and after 1980.
Yeah, that's right. So for the entire period, actually starting before World War One, around 1900 until right in the 1980s, we can see that regions are converging. That is, income per capita across these European regions is becoming more similar, but also the distribution of activity in terms of how much GDP is actually produced in a given region is actually becoming more similar. Underneath that are probably two related forces. One is the spread of industry, right? That regions that used to be dominated by agriculture are industrializing and thereby catching up. And that in turn is facilitated by the integration of markets. This is very much the story of European integration as we know it. But we can see that this actually starts already before the formation of the European Union. So this is the period of everything going nice and well until about 1980. It's not the big political shocks like the fall of the Iron Curtain. It's something starts to change in the 1980s. And then we see that regions are becoming less similar. Some are actually doing very well, growing rapidly, and others don't quite managed to keep that pace and are falling back.
And this U-shape is similar to what we're seeing in many other measures of inequality at the moment.
We do see this exactly also when we look at personal inequality. That is, for example, Piketty and others have done this work using tax records. And they see that from around 1980 onwards, a few people have way higher incomes than the others, right? Right. That's very much there since the 1980s.
Did you expect to find this when you did your analysis of the regions?
We more or less expect something happened in the 1980s because there was some literature, but nobody has connected the two data. Nobody connects the two sites because there are some previous studies for one country and two, and this was more or less obvious in some countries, but we don't expect this to be so clear at European level. This is was a bit of a surprise.
You also did a slightly different analysis where you ordered the regions from the richest to the poorest and categorized them in that way into, I think it's 14 different bins, and then worked out how many there were in each bin at that time to work out the distribution of wealth. Am I describing it correctly?
So you take the distribution of GDP per capita across regions for every given time, then you say, okay, now, who are the richest guys in this and who are the poorest? How much of sort of the mass of all these 173 regions, how many of them are actually right in the middle and how many of them are at the lower end and at the upper end? And then we produce figures to show what's happening there. It is actually quite striking to see how clear this result is, that from 1900 to 1950 and then from 1950 again to 1980, you see that more and more of these regions are actually clustering around the middle. So they are becoming more similar to each other. Of course, that means that is in relative terms. They are all becoming richer, but they are becoming at the same time more similar to each other. And then from 1980 onwards, that shifts back sort of, because some are doing so much better than the others, and a few regions are actually falling behind.
This is very similar to the story that's been told about individual inequality. It seems to be the same. It's a small collapse of the middle class regions here.
It's not only the collapse of some regions, there are some of the middle class. It's a collapse also of few specific regions and go down. I don't know, for example, the typical industrial regions, I don't know, Wales or the south of Belgium, then practically collapse in the rankings because heavy industry is no longer competitive and they lost grounds. But also is another phenomenon that for us probably was one of the big surprises, that in the previous periods, and this is a traditional history, we expect to have this kind of big districts, not these clusters of six or seven regions, more or less with similar GDP, similar specialization, and succeed together. And now this is even disappearing. Not you have one region, and the hinterland is becoming less and less rich compared to this region, and grow faster and faster compared to the hinterland. This was a huge surprise, and this is what produced and the middle class obviously not separate from this very small number of very rich regions.
So what you're saying is there, Joanna, that there's this connectedness between areas which encompass several regions that's breaking down, and the pockets of wealth are more isolated.
Yeah, and this is really new. This is, in terms of European history, this is really new, because if you look at the 900 map, then probably something similar to what happened in the 19th century. You have huge, large groups of regions together, probably covering a large proportion of every country with similar GDP, and now this is practically is collapsing.
If some of the former industrial regions are the losers, who are the winners here?
There are two kinds of winners. One is the capital regions, Paris, Ile-de-France, London, and the new, you know, technical hubs, and some are previous industrial regions, and parts of North Italy, parts of Germany, parts of Spain, these kind of regions that are quite evolved to these very highly skilled services.
From a policy point of view, should we worry about these changes in regional inequality?
I think that's an excellent question, because after all, we should worry about people, right? Not so much about places. However, when you start to realize that, you know, in order to benefit from developments in big cities, many people would have to move. That is, you have to think about the cost of moving. I think this is where it really becomes difficult, because you see many people are faced with very high cost of moving, and sometimes they can't. For example, actually the old middle class homeowners in regions that are falling behind. Think their wealth is typically in terms of one asset, which is their home. Now this home maybe is nothing worth anymore because this region is falling behind, which also means the property prices are collapsing there. So that I think that is where really, again, the middle class is coming in, because they are the ones that face actually the highest moving costs.
So the populist political argument as well, that certain regions are left behind, there is evidence for the truth of that in your research.
I think we can actually see that very clearly. It might be to some extent a story about falling behind in relative terms, right? It's not necessarily that people are actually poorer than they were before. Nevertheless, there might be a big frustration because they do see how well others are doing, but they also see, of course, in the long run that their children are probably going to do worse. So this feeling of frustration can be fueled by this observation of relative decline, and we see this in an extreme form. I think it is part really of the story of the success of various populist parties.
I think both of your home regions have done quite well in this.
Nico's from Bavaria, I'm from Catalonia. I think that Bavaria history is much more interesting than Catalan one. Catalan will be much more typical model. There are several regions. It's a very profound industrial region and make a very successful movement. Barcelona is very famous. They attract a lot of skilled people, and this produce very high incomes and a very competitive economy. This is not a very strange history. The strange thing is that it's not a capital nation. But in general, this is a very typical. It's going from a strong industrialization, not exactly in the heavy industry, but much more light industry and many sectors, to move at much more technified service sectors and tourism, a lot of different sectors and so on, and to be remain competitive and very rich.
So as an academic, I'm in the happy position to choose my place. Let's say I'm from Berlin. Originally, I'm from Bavaria. But never mind. Berlin is an interesting case here. It's a very special case because of the history of German division and unification. Berlin was actually a very unusual capital in the sense it was a very poor capital in a rich country. Berlin is now catching up to its rather normal position, that is closer to the leading position in Germany. Still very far from that, but it's getting there. It lost nearly all its industry because of the shock of division. Industry relocated to West Germany, for example, to Munich, to Frankfurt, and other places. And after unification, it never came back. So essentially, Berlin had to reinvent itself and its economy totally in the service sector. So Berlin is now in a position that it has actually a fresh start and can benefit from this new wave of globalization, which is all about tradable services.
Joan, Nicolas, thank you very much. To see the graphs of the trends we've just described, plus more detail on the methodology, a reminder that the Vox column is called The Return of Regional Inequality, Europe from 1900 to Today. And if you want to dig deeper into the author's data and find out some of the other things that it can tell us about the long-run development of Europe's regions, they've published a CEPR discussion paper, that's number 12749, and its title is Regional Economic Development in Europe, 1900 to 2010, a description of the patterns. That's well worth your time. This has been a Vox Talk presented by the Centre for Economic Policy Research. For more in the series, visit voxeu.org/vox-talks.